I ran across an extraordinary book of teachings by one of the great contemporary teachers of non-duality named Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche. It's called Vajra Speech. And I wanted to read some of the teachings from this book. We should have his photo on the wall. So can you find one? Okay. I'll start from the beginning because there are so many interesting and very subtle points in it. I may end up going through the whole book over a period of meetings. So the first section of the book is called Accomplishment. By the way, he's a teacher of the Vajrayana school of Tibetan Buddhism, which is one of the tantric schools. And they have a three-level process that they refer to as the view, the development, and the fruition, right? The view, literally, is the theory, theoria, right? The vision of what is it like to be in Buddha consciousness? What is it like to realize non-duality as one's constant state? So there is a first, a level of teaching that gives the jnana. And then there is the development phase in which they tend to use a lot of visualizations, which they admit are imitations of that state in order to develop two basic qualities within the soul that are usually not present in the ego. One is bodhicitta, which means both compassion for every being, because every being is a manifestation of the Buddha mind, and one has compassion for their state of ignorance of their true nature, which is responsible for their suffering. And one wants to, out of loving kindness, help souls stop suffering. Right? That makes sense. So if that becomes your motivation in life, it means you have to have stopped suffering if you're going to be of any help to anyone else to stop suffering, right? So there's an implicit then vow of being free of dukkha, suffering of any kind, because one is totally in love with the Buddha mind. And the way they develop that love is through devotion to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that have images, like Kuan Yin, for example, or she's the Chinese version, but Avalokiteshvara or any of the many varieties of Dhyani Buddhas that are developed in Tibetan Buddhism, as well as various gods and goddesses and Dakinis, and they have a whole menagerie of ascended beings, and you can choose your Ishta Dev like the Hindus do, and then visualize that being and feel a bond of love. Okay. Now they admit that, and they don't hide it from the students, that this is purely a projection of love that actually should be turned inward. It shouldn't be turned toward an image of a goddess or a Buddha or any of that. That's just the only reason you have to do that in that phase is you don't yet realize that you are the Buddha that you're worshiping and loving. And so you have to have an image of it so at least you feel love, because the ego doesn't love itself. It hates itself. And it is the object of hatred of its superego. So it's always suffering. It's getting nightmares and it's getting physical symptoms because it's being attacked by its own mind. Okay? This is the problem with split mind. One part of it attacks the other part. And there's a constant battle going on within. And so to eliminate that battle, there's a figure of love that then takes the energy that would go into internal conflict and turns it into devotion. Then in the final phase, they say, okay, let's stop imagining Buddhas and goddesses and all of that and realize that it's yourself you love, but not your ego, your real self, and stop believing you're an ego, please. That's the last phase. You're not a body. You're not in a world. This is a hologram. None of it is real. You are simply pure awareness. You're not even in the dream of the world. The holographic dream is not your habitat. You are the transcendent self that is like a mirror that contains the dream as a reflection, but the reflection is not really part of the mirror. It's temporary. And when the reflection is gone, all you have is the gleaming light of the mirror itself. That's who you are. And so if you can reach that realization, then you know what Buddha mind is. And you realize that that's all that is, because everything else is just part of a simulation that is a flux. It's temporary. Nothing has reality within the realm of form and duality. What is real is only consciousness itself. And consciousness itself is blissful. Always. And it's eternal. And it's changeless, because there's no time in consciousness. There's time only in the dream because of change, movement. But nothing moves within the eternal consciousness. It's pure light and pure love that is always emanating, but without any kind of change within itself. It's just a constant glow of blissful energy. That's what we are. Okay? So if you're not in that constant state of glowing with joy and bliss and in a state of total peace, then you are not in your real self. You're ignorant of who you are and what you are. And so the process is coming out of that ignorance and realizing the real self, the Buddha mind, the Buddha nature, which is the nature of reality, of everyone, because we are all made of the same stuff, which is just consciousness. Right? Okay. All that is prologue to now let's listen to Urgen Rinpoche. The first section of the book is called Accomplishment. Among the signs of practice, there is experience and accomplishment. Okay, so he's dividing it into these two phases, which is very interesting. Even in the preliminary phase, people will have experiences of momentary joy or bliss, or even think they went through ego death, and they'll talk about it as if I reached enlightenment and all that. It's not true, of course. You can have a glimpse, you can have an experience, but that's not the same as realization, okay? And so many people settle for these temporary breakthroughs that then lead to a fall back into the ego, because they have not truly recognized the reality of the real self. And it was only caused by either a drug or some special circumstance or vibrational frequency of a vortex or a situation that caused it. But it wasn't internally grokked as one's being. Okay, so experience, even if it's of a very high kind and you have a vision of God or whatever, it's meaningless. It's only the accomplishment of the realization that whatever you're experiencing, which means you're in duality, right? There's someone experiencing something, that's false, because there is nothing to experience. There is only the self. Any experience, X means outside of oneself. It means one is still in delusion. The self, once it is accomplished, does no longer live in the realm of experience. Okay, so the true sign of practice is that you are naturally and effortlessly without fixation. Now, I think that's a very important statement. What does he mean by fixation? Who has an idea? What does fixation mean? You're good.
An opinion? You call it an opinion, you call it a goal?
Okay, it could be an opinion. What else?
Attachment.
It is an attachment, yes, absolutely. But an attachment is usually thought of as a connection to a certain person. I can't let them go. I can't leave them, right? Or I can't stop using this drug or eating this food or right something like that. But he's using fixation in a much more general sense, which means any externalization of your consciousness into a world of objects. If you're fixated on an object of any kind, you have lost yourself. You have moved out of yourself into an illusory projection. Okay, so the sign of practice, not even accomplishment, the sign of practice is that you are naturally and effortlessly without fixation. You're in a flow state, and you're in total presence, but you're not fixated on anything, meaning you don't have opinions about it. I don't either like or dislike this candle or the smell of the food or whatever it is. There's just a pure flow that is not fixated on anything, and therefore nothing irritates you, nothing bothers you, and nothing attracts you. You are not moved by the realm around you in the sensory range. Okay. Also, that you are endowed with devotion, compassion, and pure perception, just like the sky is filled with the warmth of sunlight. Not here, of course, but in most places, the sky is filled with sunlight and warmth. But what he's saying is, it's an endowment. It's our natural state to be devoted, to be in that state of devotion to God. Welcome. And to love. Here's the sun in the sky right now. And so devotion, compassion, and pure perception. What does pure perception mean? What do you think?
No solid perspectives.
No solid perspective. Okay. What? Who else has an idea? Pure perception.
Pristine.
Hmm? Pristine. What does that mean, though, exactly?
Without.
Yes.
Matter.
Without judgment.
Judgment.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's even. You're right. I agree with that. Realizing that this is all the Buddha mind. You are not seeing others. You're not seeing differences. You're seeing the underlying sameness, oneness of the shining of the infinite consciousness in everyone and everything. And you don't see the various different modifications of that. You look only at the purity of the one self that's shining in all, right? Okay, so he says, all accomplishment comes through recognizing the that-ness of mind. In Sanskrit, it must have been tatata, right? The tattva, the thatness of mind. Without recognizing this, whatever we do is upside down. So what is the thatness of mind? Who has an idea? What's the thatness?
The self.
Hmm?
The self.
The self. Okay, why is it that? What does it mean, right? It comes from the Upanishads, thou art that, right? We say Om Tat Sat, Tat is that. So what we're really saying is that mind is the ultimate reality, and that's all that is. So whatever you are looking at, you are looking at that. You are looking at the Buddha. You are looking at yourself. Okay, the self cannot really see anything but itself because there is nothing other. And so if you think you're looking at someone else, it means you don't know who you are and you're not therefore able to recognize who they are. There is only that, right? And then everything else disappears and there's no one left to suffer because that does not suffer, okay? And that's all that is. All right. Now, here's a very interesting statement. to trust the consequence of karma is a true accomplishment of Dharma practice. What does that mean, to trust the consequence of karma? What do you think?
I think it means to recognize that all that happens is perfect, mm-hmm. no matter how it appears.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good. So most people suffer karmic consequences that make them angry. Okay? That means you don't get it. That whatever happened to you had to happen, and you're meant to grow from it, not to be angry at it, or at people, or at God for putting you into that situation. No, you have to trust that whatever happens is there to help you grow, not to hurt you, and not to punish you for some prior sin or anything. No, it is there to help you develop your Buddha mind, your understanding of the perfection of all that is. And if you receive it in that way and learn from the experiences of karma, you will then grow beyond karma, where nothing will cause suffering. There will be no more karma, because karma itself is an illusion that only the ego suffers. Buddha has no karma, right? The real self does not suffer. There's no karma. Karma is only in the illusory hologram. If you believe you're a bodily being, the karma is suffered by the body and the emotions that get triggered because your body got insulted or hurt by someone, right? But the consequence, being perfect, means you will learn the logic behind why that consequence had to happen, and then it will never happen again. Okay? So, he goes on. Another true accomplishment, this one I find very interesting. Another true accomplishment is to be unharmed by the experiences of bliss, clarity, and non-thought. Why would that harm anybody? Isn't that an odd statement? To be unharmed by experiences of bliss, clarity, and non-thought, while being free from the two hindrances to meditation. What are the two hindrances to meditation? Who knows the two hindrances?
Agitation.
Yes, drowsiness and agitation. Now I know both. You're all free of both of those, so this won't refer to you. But let's go back to the first point. How can someone be harmed by the experience of bliss, clarity, and non-thought?
Because it's an experience.
What?
Because if there's an experience, it's still not the truth.
That's right. You know what comes to me is, when the experience ends, then people are sad, right? I was blissful. What happened? I lost it, right? And they get harmed by it. And that means they're not trusting the perfection of the consequence of karma. Because then they'll be back and they'll realize you can't lose bliss. It's what you are, right? So harm comes from believing that bliss, clarity, and non-thought is not your natural state, and therefore that it can be taken away from you. None of you believe that, right? Good. So now he explains in more detail. Do not attach any importance to temporary experiences. None whatsoever. Okay? Very important point. There's only one thing to be confident in: the true state of realization that is unchanging like space. Okay? Temporary experiences, whether they're good or bad, he means really the bliss and the clarity and the non-thought, but whether you have that or you have very negative experiences, they have no importance whatsoever. Except that if you're bothered by it, then you have not trusted that the consequence of karma is perfect. Okay, so there's only one thing to be confident in, which is that the true state of realization is unchanging like space. Understanding this is of utmost importance. What really matters is to increase your devotion to and confidence in the Dharma, so that from within you feel that only the Dharma matters, that only the practice of this effortless presence without fixation, only that practice matters. That's all that is important, the practice of the effortless state of constant presence as the Buddha mind, unchanging like space, shining like the sun. That is the sure sign of accomplishment. I'll read one more. This is in a section called Aim. One's aim should be self-existing wakefulness. Okay? Self-existing wakefulness. Self-existing means your existence doesn't depend on anyone else. Your body's existence is not self-existent. If it weren't for an act that brought a sperm and an ovum together, your body wouldn't exist. It's not self-existent. It's dependent, right? But your existence, the reality of your consciousness, is self-existent. It's uncreated. It's unborn. It's eternal. You are not the body. Your being is not affected by life or death of the body. Okay? That's the state you must be in, and you must be awake to that. Self-existing wakefulness means you're awake to that, the thatness of consciousness. Okay, so your aim literally means the way you point your nose. It means your birthplace, your home, your motherland. So turn your nose toward home. It's not your biological mother he's talking about here. Don't go to that home. Go to the home of the mother light and be free of the illusion. And our home should be what is self-existing and free from concepts. Primordial wakefulness. Okay? That's the state. And everything that I read before that is the description of primordial wakefulness. Okay? As the self-existing, uncreated, unborn, eternal, unchanging, luminous, blissful consciousness. That's what you are. Everything else should be discarded and not allowed to arise in the mind. And not allowed, not by stopping it forcibly, but filling your mind with such love for the self that there's no space for any thoughts that would create emotions or any other kind of suffering. And only the emanation of that luminous presence remains, totally filling your consciousness with that. And then you will know what it is to be the Buddha. So let's practice being the Buddha. Enter into the silence, the stillness of total wakefulness without thought, but perfect clarity of presence, self-luminous, blissful, one with the Supreme Self. Fill the mind with the Supreme Presence and be in the state of adoration, devotion, total surrender to that Infinite Presence, and realize you are that. Keep the mind free of thought. Focused on the inmost self. The blissful presence. Let the mind be totally at rest, unmoving, with zero agitation and total wakefulness. Feel the presence of the power of God consciousness within. The power, the light, the love, the joy, the royalty, the beauty of your real self. How many got something out of this class? Yeah? Okay, prove it. Tell Kin what was the summary of what we learned. Who is able to give a summary to Kin? You just all said you got something out of it.
Be in your natural state.
Okay, that's
that
one. All right. Who else? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important to, well, you were reading at the beginning about the projection outwards of a bodhisattva or a goddess, which is initially only a projection, because actually it's the love of yourself. But initially in the practice phase, it's useful to project it out as a vision. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's still an illusion, because actually it's yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent point.
Thank you.
Swati?
You have to understand and accept the perfection of karma. And mm-hmm. if you are angry or upset about the things that happen, then you have to accept that. And there's two obstacles to meditation, which are drowsiness and agitation. Mm-hmm. And also, bliss can cause suffering. If there's an I thought that mourns the loss of the bliss, and you don't remember that you have clarity.
Bliss, clarity, and non-thoughts.
And non-thought, and natural state.
All right. Excellent. Anyone other? Yes.
Realizing that there is no other. Absolutely nothing. And not fixation. So everything can flow. Fixation meaning that there actually isn't any object to put fixated on.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Anyone else? Amrita, what did you get out of it?
The main points that stuck with me are the, about the karma, the whatever karma and strata you have.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lesson of learning to grow in order to be mm-hmm. that.
Okay, beautiful. Excellent points. Are you taking all this down, Kim?
I'm trying.
Okay. How about Nicolette? What did you get?
There's no experience in experiencing the dilemma. You put yourself into the other, there's a duality, but in the punishment, there's like a recognition of everything you got, that capital T.
That's it. Excellent point, Nicolette. Priya, what was the point you took?
It's actually just that. I'm not sure if I have anything else to add that hasn't been said.
Mm. Okay. Anyone have a point? Yes.
What you said about the split mind and how that was really strong and powerful for me, about how there's a constant conflict internally between the two minds, and the only way to stay out of that conflict is to start with an external devotion, devotee, mm-hmm. but then to the second phase is to mm-hmm. get that devotee to be the
Okay, wonderful. Excellent point. Anyone else have a point that you would like to share we haven't talked about? Yeah?
The point that you were making about the reflection, this world appearing as a reflection, it's just temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's gone, all that's left is the glimmering of the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. What is a mirror without the reflection, right? If there's nothing in it except light, but no forms, that's what you are. Okay. So everyone is a realized Buddha, correct? It is correct. Whether you think it's correct or not, it's correct. And then you have to ask why you don't think it's correct. Do you know more than Buddha knows? Do you know more than Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche knows? If you don't believe you are the Buddha, then it means you think you know better than all the teachers of history. Because they say you are the Buddha. You are Shiva. You are the One Self. So if you think you're any person other than that, then that's a delusion. And it's hubris. It's a superiority complex that masks itself as an inferiority complex, but refuses to give up its specialness. Even if it's a special badness, you'd rather have it than to just be like everyone else, because we're all one. The ego wants to be different and special. And if I can't be specially good, I'll be specially bad, but I'm not going to just be one with everything. So it's a refusal of Buddhahood. That's all the ego is. A refusal to surrender to the infinite self because it wants to be its own person and autonomous and different and free. But of course it's enslaved to all its dependencies. And the only freedom is the Buddha mind. Freedom from the ego. It's never a freedom of the ego. If you want to be free as an ego, you're going to be enslaved. You're fooling yourself in a kind of deception that will lead to consequences of karma that you won't be happy about. And so to avoid those consequences, learn from the karma you've already gone through by believing you're an ego and ask yourself, do I want more of that or would I like the bliss of realizing I'm Buddha? And then you'll surrender the ego to the Buddha and take your Buddhahood back. This is the moment to do that while the window of opportunity of Buddhahood is being offered before this hologram is washed out in the singularity of light, brighter than a billion suns, which will happen soon. May you all choose to realize you are that light and not be destroyed by it, but realize the bliss of that light and be one of those bulbs that shines with the light, one of those suns within the world that is shining and bringing that light into the darkness, not the darkness that will be wiped out when the light comes. So this is the choice everyone has to make, because the ego is darkness. The Buddha mind is light. Choose the light and you're free and karma is over and there's only bliss. But it's a choice that the ego cannot make. That's why you have to realize you're not the ego, you are the Buddha mind. And you're already free. You can't become free. You can't become the Buddha. The Buddha is eternally the Buddha. So no one ever becomes a Buddha. You can only realize you have always been the Buddha and never anything else. And then you are free. But you can only realize it in the present. It has to be a moment now where that clicks, and then suddenly the ego is not only gone forever, but you realize it was never there. It was only a delusional thought. And poof, it's gone. And only the Buddhahood, the infinite self, is all that is or ever was or shall be. May you all realize your eternal nature. Namaste.
Namaste.
And bon appetit.